Jess. Hello? I shout. Can anyone hear me? I can feel the walls swallowing the sound, feel how useless it is. I shove at the door with all my strength, hoping the weight of my body might break the lock. Nothing. I might as well be ramming myself against a concrete wall. Panicking now, I pummel the wood. Shit. Shit. Hey! I shout, desperately now. Hey! Help me! The last two words, a sudden flashback to another room. Shouting at the top of my lungs. Shouting until my voice went hoarse. But it never felt loud enough. There was no one coming. Help me! Help me! Help me! Someone! Help! She's not... My whole body is trembling. And then suddenly the door is opening, and a light flashes on. A man stands there. I take a step back. It's Antoine, the guy I just watched casually smashing a bottle against a side table. No. I can see now that I'm wrong. It was the height, maybe, and the breadth of the shoulders. But this guy is younger, and in the weak light, I can see that his hair is lighter, a dark golden colour.
Ça va?
He asks. Then, in English,
are you okay? I came down to get my laundry, and I heard...
You're British, I blurt. As British as the Queen, in fact. A proper, plummy, posh boy accent. A little like the one Ben adopted after he went to live with his new parents. He's looking at me like he's waiting for some kind of explanation. Someone locked me in here, I say. I feel shivery now that the adrenaline's wearing off. Someone did this on purpose. He pushes a hand through his hair, frowns.
I don't think so. The door was jammed when I opened it. The handle definitely seems a bit sticky.
I think of how hard I threw myself against it. Could it really just have been stuck? Well, thanks, I say weakly.
No worries.
He steps back and looks at me.
What are you doing here? Not in the carve, I mean, in the apartment.
You know Ben, on the third floor. I'm meant to be staying with him. He frowns.
Ben didn't tell me he had anyone coming to stay.
Well, it was kind of last minute, I say. So, you know Ben?
Yeah, he's an old friend. And you are?
I'm Jess, I say. Jess Hadley? His sister.
I'm Nick.
A shrug.
Well, I'm the one who suggested he come and live here.
Nick, second floor. I suggested Jess come up to my place, rather than us chatting in the chilly darkness of the cave. I'm slightly regretting it now. I've offered her a seat, but she's pacing the room, looking at my Peloton bike, my bookcases. The knees of her jeans are worn. The cuffs of her jumper frayed, her fingernails bitten down to fragments like tiny pieces of broken shell. She gives off this jittery, restless energy. Nothing like Ben's languor, his easy manner. Her voice is different too. No private school for her, I'm guessing. But then Ben's accent often changed depending on who he was speaking to. It took me a while to realize that. Hey, she says suddenly. Can I go splash some water on my face? I'm really sweaty. Be my guest. What else can I say? She wanders back in a couple of minutes later. I catch a gust of Annie Goutal Eau de Monsieur. Either she wears it too, which seems unlikely, or she helped herself when she was in there. Better? I ask.
Yeah, much thanks. Hey, I like your rain shower. That's what you call it, right?
I continue to watch her as she looks around the room. There's a resemblance there. From certain angles, it's almost uncanny. But her colouring's different to Ben's, her hair a dark auburn to his brown. Her frame small and wiry. That and the curious way she's prowling around, sizing the place up, makes me think of a little fox.
Thanks for helping me out, she says. For a moment, I thought I'd never get out.
But what on earth were you doing in the cave?
The what?
Cave, I explain. It means cellar in French.
Oh, right.
She chews the skin at the edge of her thumbnail, shrugs.
Having a look around the place, I suppose.
I saw that bottle of wine in her hand. How she slipped it back into the rack when she didn't think I was looking. I'm not going to mention it. The owner of that cellar can afford to lose a bottle or two.
It's huge down there, she says.
It was used by the Gestapo in the war, I tell her. Their main headquarters was on Avenue Foch, near the Bois de Boulogne. But towards the end of the occupation, they had overspill. They used the cave to hold prisoners, members of the resistance, that kind of thing. She pulls her face.
I suppose it makes sense.
This place has an atmosphere, you know. My mum was very into that sort of thing. Energy, auras, vibrations. Was. I remember Ben telling me about his mum. Drunk in a pub one night. Though even drunk, I suspect he never spilled more than he intended to.
Anyway,
she says, I never really believed in that stuff.
But you can feel something here. It gives me the creeps.
She catches herself.
Sorry, didn't mean to offend.
No, it's fine. I suppose I know what you mean. So, you're Ben's sister. I want to work out exactly what she's doing here. She nods.
Yep, same mum, different dads.
I notice she doesn't say anything about Ben being adopted. I remember my shock finding out, but thinking that it also made sense. The fact that you couldn't pigeonhole him like you could the others in our year at university. The staid rowing types, the studious honours students, the loose party animals. Yes, there was the public school accent, the ease, but it always felt as though there was some other note beneath it all. Hints of something rougher, darker. Maybe that's why people were so intrigued by him.
I like your gadget,
Jess says, wandering towards the kitchen.
They have one like that in a cafe I used to work in.
A laugh, without much humour in it.
I might not have gone to a posh school or uni like my brother, but I do know how to make a mean microphone.
I sense a streak of bitterness there. You want a coffee? I can make you one. I'm afraid I've only got oat milk.
Have you got any beer?
She asks, hopefully.
I know it's early, but I could really do with one.
Sure, and feel free to sit down, I say, gesturing to the sofa. Watching her prowl around the room combined with a lack of sleep is making me feel a little dizzy. I go to the fridge to get out a couple of bottles. Beer for her, kombucha for me. I never drink earlier than 7. Before I can offer to open hers, she's taken a lighter out of her pocket, fitted it between the top of her index finger and the bottom of the cap, and somehow flipped the lid off. I watch her, amazed and slightly appalled at the same time. Who is this girl? I don't think Ben mentioned you coming to stay, I say as casually as I can. I don't want her to feel like I'm accusing her of anything, but he definitely didn't. Of course, we didn't speak much the last couple of weeks. He was so busy.
Well, it was kind of last minute.
She waves her hand vaguely.
When did you last see him?
She asks.
Ben.
A couple of days ago, I think.
So you haven't heard from him today?
No. Is something the matter?
I watch as she tears at her thumbnail with her teeth, so hard it makes me wince. I see a little bead of blood blossom at the quick. He wasn't here when I arrived last night, and I haven't heard from him since yesterday afternoon. I know this is going to sound weird, but could he have been in some sort of trouble?
I cough on the sip I've just taken. Trouble? What kind of trouble?
It just feels all wrong.
She's fidgeting with the gold necklace around her neck now. I see the metal saint come free. It's the same as his.
He left me this voice note. It kind of cuts out halfway through. And now he isn't answering his phone. He hasn't read any of my messages. His wallet and keys are still in the apartment. And I know he hasn't taken his Vespa because I saw it in the basement.
But that's just like Ben, isn't it? I say. He's probably gone off for a few days chasing some story with a couple of €100 in his back pocket. You can get the train to most of Europe from here. He's always been like that since we were students. He'd disappear and come back a few days later saying he'd gone to Edinburgh because he fancied it, or he'd wanted to see the Norfolk Broads, or he'd stayed in a hostel and gone hiking in the Brecon Beacons. The rest of us in our little bubble, hardly remembering, some of us wanting to forget, that there was a world outside it. It wouldn't have occurred to us to leave, but off he'd go on his own, like he wasn't crossing some sort of invisible barrier. That hunger, that drive in him.
I don't think so,
Jess says, cutting into these memories.
He wouldn't do that, not knowing I was coming. But she doesn't sound all that certain. She sounds almost as though she's asking a question.
Anyway, you seem to know him pretty well. We hadn't seen much of each other until recently. That much, at least, is true. You know how it is. But he got in touch with me when he moved to Paris. And meeting back up, it felt like it had been no time at all, really.
I'm drawn back to that reunion nearly 3 months ago. My surprise, shock, at finding the email from him after so long. After everything.
A sports bar in Saint-Germain. A sticky floor and sticky bar. Signed French rugby shirts tacked to the wall. Moldy-looking chunks of charcuterie with your beer and French club rugby playing on about 15 different screens. But it felt nostalgic. Almost like the kind of place we would have gone to as students, nursing pints and pretending to be real men. We caught up on the missed decade between us. My time in Palo Alto, his journalism. He got out his phone to show me his work. It's not exactly hard-hitting stuff, he said, with a shrug. Not what I said I wanted to do. It's fluff, let's be honest. But it's tough right now. Should have gone the tech route like you. I coughed awkwardly. Mate, I haven't exactly conquered the tech world. That was putting it mildly. But I was almost more disappointed by his lack of success than my own. I'd have expected him to have written his prize-winning novel by now. We'd met on a student paper, but fiction always seemed more his thing, not the factual rigors of journalism. And if anyone was going to make it, I'd been so sure it would be Ben Daniels. If he couldn't, what hope was there for the rest of us?
I feel like I'm really hunting around for scraps, he said.
I get to eat in some nice restaurants, a free night out once in a while, but it's not exactly what I thought I'd end up doing.
You need a big story to break into that, make your name, a real coup. I'm sick and tired of London, the old boys' club. Thought I'd try my luck here.
Well, we both had our big plans back when we'd last seen each other, even if mine didn't involve much more than getting the fuck away from my old man and being as far away from home as possible.
A sudden clatter brings me back into the room.
Jess, on the prowl again, has knocked a photograph off the bookshelf. one of the rare few I've got up there. She picks it up.
Sorry, that's a cool boat, though,
in the photo. It's my dad's yacht.
And this is you with him?
Yes. I'm about 15 in that one. His hand on my shoulder, both of us smiling into the camera. I'd actually managed to impress him that day, taking the helm for a while.
It might have been one of the only times I've ever felt his pride in me.
A sudden shout of laughter.
And this one looks like something out of Harry Potter, she says. These black cloaks, is this?
Cambridge. A group of us, after a formal, standing on Jesus Green by the River Cam in the evening light, wearing our gowns and clutching half-drunk bottles of wine.
Looking at it, I can almost smell that green, green scent of the fresh-cut grass, the essence of an English summer. That's where you met Ben?
Yep. We worked on Varsity together. Him in editorial, me on the website. And we both went to Jesus. She rolls her eyes.
The names they give those places.
She squints at it.
He's not in this photo, is he?
No, he was taking it. Laughing, getting us all to pose. Just like Ben to be the one behind the camera, not in front of it.
Telling the story, rather than a part of it.
She moves over to the bookcases, paces up and down, reading the titles.
It's hard to imagine she ever stops moving. So many of your books are in French. That's what Ben was doing there, wasn't it? French studies or something.
Well, he was doing modern languages at first, yes. He switched to English literature later.
Really?
Something clouds her face.
I didn't know that about him. He never told me.
I recall the fragments that Ben told me about her while we were traveling. How she had it so much harder than him. No one around to pick up the pieces for her. Bounced around the care system, couldn't be placed.
So you're the friend that helped him out with this place?
She asks. That's me.
It sounds incredible,
he'd said when I suggested it the day we met up again.
And you're sure about that, the rent? You reckon it would really be that low?
I have to tell you, I'm pretty strapped for cash at the moment.
Let me find out, I told him.
But I'm pretty sure, yes. I mean, it's not in the best shape, as long as you don't mind some slightly antique details. He grinned. Not at all. You know me. I like a place with character. And I tell you, it's a hell of a lot better than crashing on people's sofas.
Can I bring my cat?
I laughed. I'm sure you can bring your cat. I told him I'd make my inquiries.
But I think it's probably yours if you want it.
Well, thanks, mate. I mean, seriously, that sounds absolutely amazing.
No problem.
Happy to help. So that's a yes, you're interested.
It's a hell yes,
he laughed. Let me buy you another drink to celebrate. We sat there for hours with more beers. And suddenly it was like we were back in Cambridge, with no time having passed between us. He moved in a couple of days later. That quick. I stood there with him in the apartment as he looked around. I know it's a little retro, I told him. It's certainly got character, he said. You know what? I think I'll keep it like this. I like it. Gothic. And I thought how great it was, having my old buddy back. He grinned at me, and for some reason I suddenly felt like everything might be okay. Maybe more than okay. Like it might help me find that guy I had been. Once upon a time.
Can I use your computer?
What? I'm jolted out of the memory. I see Jess has wandered over to my iMac.
Those bloody roaming charges are a killer. I just thought I could check Ben's Instagram again in case something's happened to his phone and he's messaged me back.
I could give you my Wi-Fi code. But she's already sitting down, a hand on the mouse. I don't seem to have any choice in the matter. She moves the mouse and the screen lights up.
Wait!
She leans forward, peering at the screensaver, then turns around to me.
This is you and Ben, isn't it? Jeez, he looks so young.
So do you. I haven't switched on my computer in several days. I forced myself to look. I suppose we were. Not much more than kids.
How strange to think it. I felt so adult at the time.
Like all the mysteries of the world had suddenly been unlocked to me. And yet we were still children, really.
I glance out of the windows.
I don't need to look at the photo. I can see it with my eyes shut. The light golden and slanting. Both of us squinting against the sun.
Where were you here?
A group of us went interrailing the whole summer after our finals.
What, on trains?
Yes. All across Europe. It was amazing. It really was. The best time of my life, even. I glance at Jess. She's gone quiet. Seems lost in her own thoughts.
Are you okay? Yeah, sure.
She forces a smile. A little of her energy seems to have evaporated.
So, where was this photo taken?
Amsterdam, I think. I don't think. I know. How could I forget? Looking at that photo, I can feel the late July sun on my face, smell the sulfur stink of the warm canal water. So clear that time, even though those memories are over a decade old. But then everything on that trip seemed important. Everything said, everything done.
Jess.
I've just realized,
Nick says, looking at his watch.
I've actually got to get going. Sorry, I know you wanted to use the computer.
Oh, I say, a little thrown. No worries. Maybe you could lend me your code? I'll see if I can get on the Wi-Fi from up there.
Sure.
He suddenly looks very eager to be gone. Maybe he's late for something. What is it? I ask. Work. I've been wondering what he does for a living. Everything about this guy says money, but whispers it rather than shouts it. As I've been looking around his place, I've noticed some very swanky-looking speakers, Bang and Olufsen. I'll look it up later, but I can just tell they're expensive. A fancy camera, Leica, a massive screen in the corner, Apple. And that professional-looking coffee machine. But you have to really look to see the wealth. Nick's are the possessions of someone who is loaded, but doesn't want to boast about it. Might even be a little embarrassed by it. But they tell a story. As do the books on his shelves. The titles that I can understand, anyway. Fast Forward Investing. The Technologized Investor. Catching a Unicorn, The Science of Self-Discipline. As did the stuff in his bathroom. I spent about 3 seconds splashing my face with cold water and the rest of the time having a good route through his cabinets. You can learn a lot about someone from their bathroom. I learned this when I was taken to meet prospective foster families. No one's ever going to stop you if you ask to use the toilet. I go in there, poke around, sometimes nick a lipstick or a bottle of perfume, sometimes explore the rooms on the way back, find out if they were concealing anything scary or weird. In Nick's bathroom, I found all the usual. Mouthwash, toothpaste, aftershaves, paracetamol, posh toiletries with names like Aesop and Byredo, and then, interesting, quite a large supply of oxycodone. Everyone has their poison. I get that. I dabbled with some stuff back in the day, when it felt like it might be easier to stop caring about anything, to just kind of slip out the back door of life. It wasn't for me, but I get it. And I guess rich boys feel pain, too.
I'm, well, between jobs at the moment.
Nick says, what were you doing before? I ask, reluctantly moving away from the desk. I'm fairly certain his last job didn't involve working in a dive with inflatable palm trees and flamingos dangling from the ceiling.
I was in San Francisco for a while. Palo Alto. Tech startups. An angel, you know?
No.
An investor.
Oh. It must be nice to be so casual about looking for work. Clearly, between jobs doesn't mean that he's scrabbling for cash. He squeezes past me to get to the doorway. I've been blocking his way, and being a nice posh English boy, he's probably too polite to ask me to budge. I smell his cologne as he does. Smoky and expensive and delicious. The same one I had a spray of in his bathroom. Oh, I say, sorry, I'm holding you up.
It's okay.
But I get the impression he's not as relaxed as he sounds. Something in his posture, perhaps. A tightness about his jaw. Well, thanks for your help.
Look, he says, I'm sure it's nothing to worry about. But I'm still keen to help. Anything I can do. Any questions I can answer, I'll try to.
There is one thing, I say. Do you know if Ben's seeing anyone? He frowns.
Seeing anyone?
Yeah, like a girlfriend or something more casual.
Why do you ask?
Just a hunch. It's not like me to be prudish, but there's something in me that gets the ick at describing the knickers I found in Ben's bed. He puts a hand up to his hair and runs his fingers through it, which only makes his curls stand out more messily. He's beautiful. Yes, all my focus is on finding Ben, but I'm also not blind. I've always had a stupid weakness for a polite posh boy. I'm not saying I'm proud of it.
Not that I know of, he says, finally. I don't think he has a girlfriend. But I suppose I don't know everything about his life here in Paris. I mean, we'd kind of fallen out of touch before he arrived here.
Yeah, I know how that is.
But that's just like Ben, isn't it?
Nick had said just before.
He's always been like that, since we were students.
And all I could think was, is he? Has he? And if he was always rushing off at the drop of a hat when he was at Cambridge, how did he not find more time to come and see me? He was always saying he was
so busy with essays,
or
I can't miss any of my tutorials. You know how it is.
But I didn't, of course. He knew I didn't. One of the only times he came to see me, I was fostering in Milton Keynes at the time, was when I suggested a trip to Cambridge. I had an inkling that the threat of his scuzzy foster kid sister turning up and damaging his image might work. Thinking about it, I feel a little spike of something that I hope is anger, not hurt. Hurt is the worst.
Sorry not to be more use,
Nick says.
But if you need me, I'm right here, just one floor down.
Our eyes meet. His are a very dark blue, not the brown I'd taken them for. I tried to see past the little tug of attraction. Can I trust this guy? He's Ben's mate. He says he's keen to help. The problem is, I'm not good at trusting people. I've been used to fending for myself for too long. But Nick could be useful. He knows Ben, apparently better than I do, in some ways. He clearly speaks French. He seems like a decent guy. I think of weird, jumpy Mimi and frosty Sophie Meunier. It's nice to think someone in this building might be a useful ally. I watch as he pulls on a smart navy wool coat, wraps a soft-looking grey scarf around his neck. He goes to the door and opens it for me.
It's nice to meet you, Jess, he says, with a small smile.
He looks like a painting of an angel. I don't know where the thought comes from. Maybe it's because he used the word himself just now. But I know that it's right. Perfect, even. A fallen angel. It's the dark gold curls, those purple shadows under his navy eyes. Mom had a thing about angels, too. She was always telling me and Ben, we all have one looking out for us. Shame hers didn't seem up to the job.
And look,
Nick says,
I'm sure Ben will turn up.
Thanks. I think so too. I tried to believe it.
Here, let me give you my number.
That'd be great. I give him my phone. He puts his details in. As I take it from him, our fingers brush, and he quickly drops his hand. Back up in Ben's apartment, I'm relieved to find I can get onto Nick's Wi-Fi using the password he gave me. I head to Ben's Instagram and look for Nick Miller, the name he's put in my phone. But I can't see him among Ben's followers. I try a more general search and get Nick Millers from all over the place. The States, Canada, Australia. I look through them until my eyes sting. But they're too young, too old, too bald, from the wrong country. Google is useless too. There's some fictional guy called Nick Miller from a TV show that fills all the Google results. I give up. Just as I'm about to put it back in my pocket, my phone vibrates with a text. And for a moment I think, Ben. It's from Ben. How amazing would that be? After all this, it's from an unknown number.
Got your message about Ben. Haven't heard from the guy, but he promised me a couple of pieces of work and a pitch. I'm working at the Belle Epoque Cafe, next to the Jardin de Luxembourg, all day. You can meet me here. Tea.
I'm confused for a moment. Then I scroll up to my message above. And I realize it's the guy I texted earlier. I take Ben's wallet out of my back pocket to remind me of his full name. Theo Mendelssohn, Paris editor, Guardian. I'm coming now, I text back. Just before I slide the card back into the wallet, I notice another one sitting behind it. It catches my eye because it's so simple, so unusual. Made from metal, it's a dark midnight blue with an image like an exploding firework, picked out in gold. No text or numbers or anything. Not a credit card. Not a business card either, surely. Then what? I hesitate. Feel the surprising weight of it in my palm. Then pocket it. When I open the door that leads onto the courtyard, I realize it's already starting to get dark. The sky the color of an old bruise. When did that happen? I haven't noticed the hours passing. This place has swallowed time, like something from a fairy tale. As I walk through the courtyard, I hear a sound close by, a rasping scritch, scritch, scritch. I turn and start as I see a small, stooped figure standing only a couple of meters away to my right. It's the old woman, the one I saw last night. She wears a scarf tied about her grey hair and some sort of long, shapeless cardigan over an apron. Her face is all nose and chin, hollow eye sockets. She could be anything from 70 to 90. She's holding a broom, which she's using to sweep dead leaves into a heap. Her eyes are fixed on me. Bonsoir, I say to her. Have you seen Ben? From the third floor? I point up to the windows of the apartment, but she just keeps on sweeping. Scritch, scritch, scritch. All the while watching me. Then she steps even closer, her eyes on me the whole time, barely even blinking. But just once, quickly, she looks up at the apartment building, as though checking for something. Then she opens her mouth and speaks in a low hiss, a sound not unlike the rasping of those dead leaves.
There is nothing for you here.
I stare at her. What do you mean? She shakes her head, and then she turns and walks away, goes back to her sweeping. It all happens so quickly, I could almost believe I imagined the whole thing. Almost. I stare after her stooped, retreating figure. For Christ's sake, it feels like everyone I meet in here is speaking in riddles. Except Nick, maybe. I have this sudden, almost violent urge to run up to her and, I don't know, shake her or something. Force her to tell me what she means. I swallow my frustration. When I turn to open the gate, I'm sure I can feel her gaze across my shoulder blades, definite as the touch of fingertips. And as I step onto the street, I can't help but wonder, was that a warning or a threat?
Concierge, the lodge. The gate clangs shut behind the girl. She thinks that she's staying in a normal apartment building, a place that follows ordinary rules. She has no idea what she has got herself into here. I think of Madame Meunier's instructions. I know that I have no option but to obey. I have too much at stake here not to cooperate. I will tell her that the girl has just left, as she asked me to do. I will tell her when she comes back, too. Just like the obedient member of staff I am. I do not like Madame Meunier, as I have made clear. But we have been forced into an uneasy kind of alliance by this girl's arrival. She has been sneaking around, asking questions of those that live here, just like he did. I can't afford to have her drawing attention to this place. He wanted to do that too. There are things here that I have to protect, you see. Things that mean I can never leave this job. And up until recently, I have felt safe here. Because these are people with secrets. I have been too deep into those secrets. I know too much. They can't get rid of me. And I can never be rid of them. He was kind, the newcomer. That was all. He noticed me. He greeted me each time he passed in the courtyard, on the staircase. Asked me how I was. Commented on the weather. It doesn't sound like much, does it? But it felt like such a long time since someone had paid any attention to me, let alone shown me kindness. Such a long time since I had even been noticed as a human being. and soon afterwards he began asking his questions. "How long have you worked here?" he inquired, as I washed the stone floor at the base of the staircase.
"A long time, monsieur."
I wrung out my mop against the bucket. "And how did you come to work here? Here, let me do that." He carried the heavy bucket of water across the hallway for me.
"My daughter came to Paris first. I followed her here."
"What did she come to Paris for?"
"That was all a very long time ago, monsieur."
"I'm still interested, all the same."
That made me look at him more closely.
Suddenly, I felt I had told him enough. This stranger. Was he too kind? Too interested? What did he want from me? I was very careful with my answer.
"It isn't a very interesting story. Perhaps some other time, monsieur. I have to get on with my work. But thank you for your help."
"Of course, don't let me hold you up."
For so many years, my insignificance and invisibility have been a mask I can hide behind. And in the process, I have avoided raking up the past, raking up the shame. As I say, this job may have its small losses of dignity, but it does not involve shame. But his interest, his questions. For the first time in a very long time, I felt seen. And like a fool, I fell for it. And now this girl has followed him here. She needs to be encouraged to leave before she's able to work out that things are not what they seem. Perhaps I can persuade her to go.
Jess. It's strange to be back among people. Traffic, noise, after the hush of the building. Disorientating too, because I still don't really know where I am, how all the roads around here connect to one another. I check the map on my phone quickly, so as not to burn too much more data. The cafe where I'm meeting this Theo guy turns out to be all the way across town on the other side of the river, so I decide to take the metro, even though it means I'll have to break another of the notes I nicked from Ben. It feels like the further I move away from the apartment, the easier I can breathe. It's like a part of me has smelt freedom and never wants to go back inside that place, even though I know I have to. I walk along cobbled streets, past crowded pavement cafes with wicker chairs, people chatting over wine and cigarettes. I pass an old wooden windmill, erupting from behind a hedge, and wonder what on earth that's doing in the middle of the city, in someone's garden. Hurrying down a long flight of stone steps, I have to climb around a guy sleeping in a fort of soggy-looking cardboard boxes. I drop a couple of euros into his paper cup. A little way on, I cut through a couple of smart-looking squares that look almost identical. Except, in the middle of one, there are these old guys playing some kind of boule, and in the other, a merry-go-round with a candy-striped top, kids clinging onto model horses and leaping fish. When I get to the more crowded streets around the metro stop, there's an odd, tense feeling, like something's about to happen. It's like a scent in the air, and I have a good nose for trouble. Lo and behold, I spot three police vans parked in a side street. I glimpse them sitting inside wearing helmets, stab vests. On instinct, I keep my head down. I follow the stream of people underground. I get stuck in the turnstile because I forget to take the little paper ticket out. I don't know how to unlatch the doors on the train when it arrives, so a guy has to help me before it pulls away without me. All of it makes me feel like a clueless tourist, which I hate. Clueless is dangerous. It makes you vulnerable. As I stand in the crowded, smelly, too warm crush of bodies on the train, I get the feeling I'm being watched. I glance around. A cluster of teenagers hanging from the rails, looking like they've stepped out of a 90s skate park. A young woman in a leather jacket. A few elderly women with tiny dogs and grocery trolleys. A group of bizarrely dressed people with ski goggles on their heads and bandanas round their necks. One of them carrying a painted sign. But nothing obviously suspicious. And when we get to the next stop, a man playing an accordion steps on, blocking half the carriage from view. Up out of the metro, the quickest way seems to be through a park, the Jardin du Luxembourg. In the park, the light is purple, shifting, not quite dark. On the path, leaves crunch under my feet, where they haven't been swept into huge, glowing orange pyramids. The branches of the trees are nearly bare. There's an empty bandstand, a shuttered cafe, chairs stacked in piles. Again, I have that feeling of being watched, followed. Certain I can feel someone's gaze on me. But every time I turn back, no figure stands out. Then I see him. Ben. He flashes right by me, jogging alongside another guy. What the hell? He must have seen me. Why didn't he stop? Ben! I shout, quickening my step. Ben! But he doesn't look back. I start to jog. I can just about make him out, disappearing into the dim light. Shit! I'm lots of things, but I'm not a runner. Hey, Ben! For fuck's sake! He doesn't turn around, though several other runners glance at me as they pass. Finally, I'm just behind him, breathing hard. I reach out, touch his shoulder. He turns around. I take a step backwards. It isn't Ben. His face is totally wrong. Eyes too close together. Weak chin. I see Ben's raised eyebrow, clear as if he really were standing in front of me.
You mistook me for that guy. Qu'est-ce que tu veux?
The stranger asks, looking irritated. Then,
what do you want?
I can't answer, partly because I can't breathe and talk at once, but mainly because I'm so confused. He makes a little crazy gesture to his mate as they jog off. Of course it wasn't Ben. As I watch him move away, I can see everything's wrong. He runs clumsily, his arms loose and awkward. There's never been anything awkward about Ben. I'm left with the same feeling I had when he ran by me. It was like seeing a ghost. The Café Belle Epoque has a kind of festive look to it, glimmering red and gold, light spilling onto the pavement. The tables outside are crowded with people chatting and laughing, and the windows are steamy with condensation from all the bodies crowded around tables inside. Round the corner, where they haven't turned on the heat lamps, there's one guy on his own hunched over a laptop. Somehow, I just know this is him. Theo? I feel like I'm on a Tinder date, if I bothered going on those anymore, and it wasn't all catfishers and assholes. He glances up with a scowl. Dark hair long overdue a cut, and the beginnings of a beard. He looks like a pirate who's decided to dress in ordinary clothes. A woolen jumper, frayed at the neckline, under a big jacket. Theo? I ask again. We texted? About Benjamin Daniels. I'm Jess. He gives a curt nod. I pull out the little metal chair opposite him. It sticks to my hand with cold.
Mind if I smoke?
I think the question's rhetorical. He's already pulled out a crumpled pack of Marlboro Reds. Everything about him is crumpled. Sure, I'll have one, thanks. I can't afford a smoking habit, but I'm feeling jittery enough to need one. Even if he didn't actually offer. He spends the next 30 seconds struggling to light his cigarette with a crappy lighter, muttering under his breath, "Fuck's sake," and "Come on, you bastard." I think I detect a slight accent as he does. "You're from East London?" I ask, thinking that maybe if I ingratiate myself, he'll be more willing to help. "Whereabouts?" He raises a dark eyebrow, doesn't answer. Finally, the lighter works, and the cigarettes are lit. He draws on his like an asthmatic on an inhaler, then sits back and looks at me. He's tall, uncomfortable looking in the little chair, one long leg crossed over the other knee at the ankle. He's kind of attractive, if you like your men rough around the edges. But I'm not sure I do. And I'm shocked at myself for even thinking about it in the circumstances. "So," he says, narrowing his eyes through the smoke. "Ben." Something about the way he says my brother's name suggests there's not that much love lost there. Maybe I found the one person immune to my brother's charm. Before I can answer, a waiter comes over, looking pissed off at having to take our order, even though it's his job. Theo, who looks equally pissed off at having to talk to him and speaking French with a determined English accent, orders a double espresso and something called a Ricard.
"Late night, on a deadline," he tells me, a little defensively.
Mainly to warm up, I ask for a chocolat chaud, €6. Let's assume he's paying.
"I'll have the other thing too," I tell the waiter.
"Ricard?"
I nod. The waiter slouches off. "I don't think we served that at the Copacabana," I say.
"The what?"
"This bar I worked in, until a couple of days ago, actually." He raises a dark eyebrow.
"Sounds classy."
It was the absolute worst. But the day the pervert decided to show his disgusting little dick to me was the day I'd finally had enough. Also the day I decided I'd get the creep back for all the times he'd lingered too long behind me, breath hot and wet on the back of my neck, or steered me out of the way, hands on my hips, or the comments he'd made about the way I looked, the clothes I wore. All those things that weren't quite things, except they were, making me feel a little bit less myself. Another girl might have left then and never come back. Another might have called the police. But I'm not that girl.
"Right," Theo says.
Clearly he has no time for further chit-chat.
"Why are you here?"
"Ben, does he work for you?"
"Nah, no one works for anyone these days. Not in this line of work. It's dog-eat-dog out there. Every man for himself. But yeah, sometimes I commission a review from him, a travel piece. He's been wanting to get into investigative stuff. I guess you know that." I shake my head. "He's due to deliver a piece on the riots, in fact."
"The riots?"
"Yeah."
He peers at me like he can't believe I don't know.
"People are seriously fucked off about a hike in taxes, petrol prices. It's got pretty nasty. Tear gas, water cannons, a lot. It's all over the news. Surely you've seen something."
"I've only been here since last night. But then I remember. I saw police vans near the Big L metro stop. I remember the group with the ski goggles on the train. And maybe some protesters. Yeah, probably. Riots have been breaking out all over town. And Ben's meant to be writing me a piece on them. But he was also going to tell me about a so-called scoop he had for me. This morning, in fact. He was very mysterious about it. But I never heard from him. A new possibility. Could that be it? Ben dug too deep into something. Pissed off someone nasty. And he's had to... what? Do a runner? Disappear? Or... I don't want to think about the other possibilities. Our drinks come. My hot chocolate, thick and dark and glossy in a little jug with a cup. I pour it out and take a sip and close my eyes. Because it may be €6, but it is also the best fucking hot chocolate I have had in my life. Theo pours 5 sachets of brown sugar into his coffee, stirs it in. Then he takes a big glug of his Ricard. I give mine a sip. It tastes of licorice, a reminder of all the sticky shots of Sambuca I've done behind the bar, bought for me by punters or snuck from the bottle on a slow evening. I down it. Theo raises his eyebrows. I wipe my mouth. Sorry, I needed that. It's been a really shitty 24 hours. You see, Ben's disappeared. I know you haven't heard from him, but you don't have any idea where he might be, do you? Theo shrugs. Sorry. I feel the small hope I'd been holding on to fizzle and die. How do you mean disappeared? He wasn't in his apartment last night, when he said he would be. He's not answering any of my calls, or even reading my messages. And there's all this other stuff. I swallow. Tell him about the blood on the cat's fur, the bleach stain, the hostile neighbours. As I do, I have a moment where I think, how has it come to this? Sitting here with a stranger in a strange city, trying to find my lost brother. Theo sits there, dragging on his cigarette and squinting at me through the smoke, and his expression doesn't change at all. The guy has a great poker face. The other strange thing, I say, is he's been living in this big, swanky building. I mean, I can't imagine Ben makes that much from writing. Judging by the state of Theo's outfit, I suspect not. No, you certainly don't get into this business for the money. I remember something else. The strange metal card I took from Ben's wallet. I slide it out from the back pocket of my jeans. I found this. Does it mean anything to you? He studies the gold firework design, frowning. Not sure. I've definitely seen that symbol, but I can't place it right now. Can I take it? I'll get back to you. I hand it over, a little reluctantly, because it's one of the few things I have that feels like a clue. Theo takes it from me, and there's something about the way he grabs it that I don't like. It suddenly seems too eager, despite the fact he's told me he doesn't know Ben all that well and doesn't seem all that concerned for his welfare. He doesn't exactly give off a Good Samaritan vibe. I'm not sure about this guy. Still, beggars can't be choosers. There's one other thing, I say, remembering. Ben left this voice note for me last night, just before I got into Gardenaur. Theo takes my phone. He plays the recording, and Ben's voice sings out, "Hey, Jess." It's strange hearing it again like this. It sounds different to the last time I listened. Somehow, not quite like Ben. Like he's that much further out of reach. Theo listens to the whole thing. It sounds like he says something else, at the end. Have you been able to work out what?
No, I can't hear it. It's too muffled.
He puts up a finger. Hang on. Then he reaches into the rucksack by his chair, as crumpled as everything else about him, and pulls out a tangled pair of headphones.
Right. Noise cancelling, and they go really loud. Want one?
He holds out a bud to me. I stick it in my ear. He dials up the volume to the max and presses play on the voice note again. We listen to the familiar part of the recording. Ben's voice.
Hey, Jess. So it's number 12, Rue des Armands. Got that? Third floor. And just ring the buzzer. I'll be up waiting for you.
His voice seems to cut off mid-sentence, just like every time I've listened to it before. But now I hear it. What sounded like a crackle on the voicemail is actually a creaking of wood. I recognize that creak. It's the hinges of the door to the apartment. And then I hear Ben's voice at a distance, quiet, but still much clearer than what had been only a mumble before.
What are you doing here?
A long pause. Then he says,
what the fuck?
Next there's a sound. A groan. Even at this volume, it's difficult to tell if it's a person making the sound or something else. A floorboard creaking. Then, silence. I feel even colder than I did before. I find myself taking hold of my necklace, reaching for the pendant, gripping it hard. Theo plays the recording again, and finally, a third time. Here it is. Here's the proof. Someone was there in the apartment with Ben. The night he left this voice note. We each remove an earbud, look at each other.
Yeah, Theo says. I'd say that's a little fucking weird.
Mimi, fourth floor. She's not in the apartment right now. I know because I've been watching from my bedroom window. All the lights are off on the third floor, the room in darkness. But for a moment, I actually think I see him, appearing out of the shadows. Then I blink and of course there's no one there. But it would be like him. He had this habit of showing up unannounced, just like he did the second time I met him. I'd stopped by this old vinyl store on my way back from the Sorbonne, pêle-mêle. It was so hot. We have this expression in French, soleil de plomb, for when the sun feels as heavy as lead. That was what it was like that day. Hard to imagine now when it's so cold out. It was horrible. Exhaust fumes and sweaty, sunburned tourists crammed together on the pavements. I always hate the tourists, but I hate them most of all in the summer, bumbling around, hot and angry that they came to the city rather than the beach. But there were no tourists in the store because it looks so gloomy and depressing from the outside, which is exactly why I like it. It was dark and cool, like being underwater. The sounds from outside muted. I could spend hours in there in my own little bubble, hiding from the world, floating between the stacks of vinyl and listening to record after record in the scratched glass booth.
Hey!
I turned around. There he was. The guy who just moved in on the third floor. I saw him most days, wheeling his Vespa across the courtyard, or sometimes moving around in his apartment. He always left the shutters open. But close up it was different. I could see the stubble on his jaw, the coppery hairs on his arms. I could see he wore a chain around his neck, disappearing beneath the neckline of his t-shirt. I wouldn't have expected that somehow. He seemed too preppy. Up close, I could catch the tang of his sweat, which sounds kind of gross, but it was a clean, peppery smell. Not the fried onion stink you get on the metro. He was kind of old, like I'd said to Camille. But he was also kind of beautiful. Actually, he took my breath away.
It's Merveille, isn't it?
I nearly dropped the record I was holding. He knew my name. He'd remembered. And somehow, even though I hate my name, on his lips it sounded different. Almost special. I nodded because I didn't feel like I could speak. My mouth tasted of metal. Maybe I'd bitten my tongue. I imagined the blood pooling between my teeth. In the silence, I could hear the ceiling fan. Whoomp, whoomp, whoomp. Like a heartbeat. Finally, I managed to speak. Most people call me Mimi.
Mimi? Suits you. I'm Ben.
His English accent. The bluntness of it.
We're neighbors. I moved into the apartment on the third floor a few days ago.
Je sais, I said. It came out like a whisper. I know. It seemed crazy that he thought I might not know.
It's such a cool building. You must love living there.
I shrugged.
All that history, all those amazing features, the cav, the elevator.
There's a dumbwaiter too. I blurted it out. It's one of my favorite things in the building. I wasn't sure why, but I suddenly wanted to share it with him. He leant forward.
A dumbwaiter?
He looked so excited. I felt a warm glow that I'd been the cause of it.
Really?
Yeah, from back when the building was a proper hôtel particulier. It belonged to this countess or something, and there was a kitchen down in the cave. They'd send food and drink up in it, and the laundry would come back down.
That's amazing. I've never actually seen one of those in real life.
Where?
No, wait, don't tell me. I'm going to try and find it.
He grinned. I realized I was smiling back. He pulled at the collar of his t-shirt.
Christ, it's hot today.
I saw the small pendant on the end of the chain come free. You wear a Saint Christopher? Again, I just kind of blurted it out. I think it was the surprise at seeing it, recognizing the little gold saint.
Oh.
He looked down at the pendant.
Yeah. This was my mum's. She gave it to me when I was small. I never take it off. I kind of forget it's there.
I tried to see him as a child and couldn't. Could only see him tall, broad, the tanned skin of his face. He had lines, yes, but now I realized they didn't make him look old. They just made him seem more interesting than any of the guys I knew. Like he'd been places, seen stuff, done stuff. He grinned.
I'm impressed you recognized it. You're a Catholic?
My cheeks flamed. My parents sent me to a Catholic school. A Catholic girls' school.
Your papa really hoped you'd turn out a nun, Camille said, the closest thing he could find to a chastity belt.
Most kids I know, like Camille, went to big lycées where they wore their own clothes and smoked cigarettes and ate each other's faces in the street at lunch break. Going to a place like the Sœur Servante du Sacré-Cœur makes you into a total freak. Like something out of the kids' book Madeleine. What it means is you get stared at in your uniform by a certain kind of creep on the métro and ignored by all the other guys. Makes you unable to talk to them like a normal human being, which is probably exactly why Papa chose it for me. Of course, I didn't stay the whole time at the SSSC. They had some trouble with a teacher there, a young man. My parents thought it best I leave, and for the last few years I had a private tutor, which was even worse. I saw Benjamin Daniels looking at the record I was holding.
Velvet Underground,
he said.
Love them.
The design on the front of the vinyl sleeve, by Andy Warhol, was a series of pictures showing wet red lips opening to suck soda from a straw. Suddenly it seemed somehow dirty, and I felt my cheeks grow warm again.
I'm getting this,
he said, holding up his record. The Yeah Yeah Yeahs.
You like them?
I shrugged. Je ne sais pas. I'd never heard of them. I'd never listened to the Velvet Underground record I'd picked up either. I just liked the Warhol design. Had planned to copy it in my sketchbook when I got home. I go to the Sorbonne. But what I'd really like to do, if it were left up to me, is art. Sometimes, when I've got a stick of charcoal or a paintbrush in my hand, it feels like the only time I'm complete. The only way I can speak properly.
Well, I've got to run.
He made a face.
Got a deadline to meet.
Even that sounded kind of cool, having a deadline. He was a journalist. I'd watched him working late into the night at his laptop.
But you guys are on the fourth floor, right? Back at the building? You and your flatmate. What's her name?
Camille. No one forgets Camille. She's the hot one, the fun one. But he'd forgotten her name. He'd remembered mine. A few days later, a note was pushed under the apartment door.
I found it.
I couldn't work out what it meant at first. Who had found what? It didn't make any sense. It had to be something for Camille. And then, I remembered our conversation in the record store. Could it be? I went to the cupboard that contained the dumbwaiter, pulled out the hidden handle, cranked it to bring the little cart upwards. And I saw there was something in it. The Yeah Yeah Yeahs record he'd bought in the store. A note was attached to it.
Hey, Mimi. Thought you might like to try this. Let me know what you think. B.
Kiss.
Who's that from?
Camille came over, read the note over my shoulder.
He lent it to you? Ben?
I could hear the surprise in her voice. I saw him yesterday, she said. He told me he'd love it if I could feed his kitty, if he ever goes away. He's given me his spare key. She flipped a lock of caramel-colored hair behind one ear. I felt a little sting of jealousy. But I reminded myself he hadn't left her a note. He hadn't sent her a record. There's this expression in French. Être bien dans sa peau. To feel good in your own skin. I don't feel that way often. But holding that record, I did. Like I had something that was just mine. Now I look at the cupboard that has a dumbwaiter hidden inside it. I find myself drifting over to it. I open the cupboard to expose the pulleys, crank the handle just like I did that day in August. Wait for the little card to come into view.
What?
I stare. There's something inside it. Just like when he sent me the record. But this isn't a record. It's something wrapped in cloth. I reach down to pick it up, and as I close my hand around it, I feel a sting. Hold my hand up and see blood beading from my palm. Merde. Whatever is inside here has cut me, biting through the fabric. I drop it, and the cloth spills its contents onto the ground. I take a step back. Look at the blade, crusted with something that looks like rust or dirt but isn't. Something that's also streaked all over the cloth it was wrapped in. And I start to scream.
Jess. I can't stop thinking about how Ben sounded at the end of that message. The fear in his voice. What are you doing here? The emphasis. Whoever was there in the room, it sounded like he knew them. And then the... What the fuck? My brother, always so in control of any situation. I've never heard him like that. It hardly even sounded like Ben. There's a sick feeling in the pit of my stomach. It's been there all along, really, growing since last night. But now I can't ignore it any longer. I think something happened to my brother last night, before I arrived. Something bad.
Are you going to go back to that place? Theo asks. After hearing that?
I'm kind of struck by his concern, especially as he doesn't seem the sensitive sort.
Yeah, I say, trying to sound more confident than I feel. I need to be there. And I do. Besides, I don't say this. I don't have anywhere else to go.
I decide to walk back instead of taking the metro. It's a long way, but I need to be out in the air, need to try and think clearly. I look at my phone to check my route. It buzzes. You have used nearly all your roaming data. To buy more, follow this link. Shit. I put it back in my pocket. I pass little shishi shops painted red, emerald green, navy blue, their brightly lit windows displaying printed dresses, candles, sofas, jewellery, chocolates, even some special bloody meringues tinted pale blue and pink. There's something for everyone here, I suppose, if you've got the money to spend. On the bridge, I push through crowds of tourists taking selfies in front of the river, kissing, smiling, talking and laughing. It's like they're living in a different universe. And now the beauty of this place feels like so much colourful wrapping hiding something evil inside. I can smell things rotting beneath the sweet, sugary scents from the bakeries and chocolate shops. Fish on the ice outside of fishmongers leaving stinking puddles collecting on the pavement. The reek of dog shit trodden into the road. The stench of blocked drains. The sick feeling grows. What happened to Ben last night? What can I do? There have been times in my life when I've been pretty desperate. Not quite sure how I'm going to make the rent that month. Times I've thanked God I have a half-brother with deeper pockets than me. Because yeah, I might have resented him in the past for having so much more than I ever did. But he has got me out of some pretty tight spots. He came and collected me from a bad foster situation once in the Gulf his parents had bought him, even though it was in the middle of his exams.
We have to stick together, us orphans. No, worse than orphans, because our dads don't want us. They're out there, but they don't want us.
You're not like me, I told him. You've got a family, the Daniels. Look at you. Listen to how you talk. Look at this frigging car. You've got so much of everything. A shrug.
I've only got one little sister.
Now it's my turn to help him. And even though every part of me recoils from calling the police, I think I have to. I take out my phone, search the number, dial 112. I'm on hold for a few moments. I wait, listening to the engaged tone, fiddling with my St. Christopher. Finally, someone picks up. Comment puis-je vous aider?
A woman's voice.
Parlez-vous anglais?
Non.
Can I speak to someone who does?
A sigh.
Une minute.
After a long pause, another voice. A man's. Yes. I begin to explain. Somehow the whole thing sounds so much flimsier out loud. Excuse me, I do not understand. Your brother left you a voice message from his apartment, and you are worried?
He sounded scared.
But there was no sign of a break-in in his home?
No, I think it was someone he knew.
Your brother is a child?
No, he's in his 30s, but he's disappeared.
And you are certain he has not, for example, gone away for a few days? Because that seems like the likeliest possibility, no?
I have this growing feeling of hopelessness. I don't feel like we're getting anywhere here. I'm fairly certain, yeah. It's all pretty fucking weird. Sorry. And he's not answering his phone. He's left his wallet, his keys.
A long pause. Okay, mademoiselle, give me your name and your address. I will make a formal record and we will come back to you.
I don't want to be on any formal record of anything. What if they compare notes with the UK? Run my name. And the way he says, formal record, in that bored, flat voice, sounds like...
Yeah, we'll think about doing something in a couple of years after we've done all the stuff that actually matters. And maybe a bit of the stuff that doesn't. Mademoiselle? He prompts. I hang up. That was a total waste of time. But did I really expect anything else? The British police have never helped me before. Why did I think their French counterparts would be any different? When I look up from my phone, I realize I've lost my bearings. I must have been wandering aimlessly while I was on the call. I go to the map on my phone, but it won't load. As I try to get it to work, my phone buzzes and a notification pops up. You have used up all of your roaming data. To buy more, follow this link. Shit. Shit. It's getting darker too. And somehow this only makes me feel more lost. Okay. Pull yourself together, Jess. I can do this. I just need to find a busier street. Then I can find a metro station and a map. But the streets get quieter and quieter. Until I can hear just one other set of footsteps, a little way behind me. There's a high wall on my right, and I realize, glimpsing a little plaque nailed to it, I'm skirting a cemetery. Above the wall I can just make out the taller tombs, the wingtips, and bent head of a mourning angel. It's almost completely dark now. I stop. The footsteps behind me stop too. I walk faster. The footsteps quicken. Someone is following me. I knew it. Around the curve of the wall, so I'll be out of sight for a few seconds. Then, instead of carrying on, I stop and press myself back against the wall on the other side. My heart's beating hard against my ribs. This is probably really fucking stupid. What I should be doing is running away, finding a busy street, surrounding myself with other people. But I have to know. I wait until a figure appears, tall, a dark coat. My chest is burning. I realize I've been holding my breath. The figure turns, slowly, looking around, looking for me. They're wearing a hood. And for a moment I can't see their face. Then they take a sudden step back. I know they've seen me. The hood falls down.
I can see their face now in the light from the street lamp. It's a woman, young, beautiful enough to be a model. Dark brown hair cut in a sharp fringe, a mole on her high cheekbone, like a piece of punctuation. A hoodie under a leather jacket. She's staring at me in surprise. Hello? I say. I take a cautious step towards her, the shock ebbing away. Especially now I can see she's not the threatening figure I'd imagined. Why were you following me? She backs away. It feels like I have the upper hand now. What do you want? I ask, more insistently. I am looking for Ben. A strong accent, not French, Eastern European maybe, the thick sound of the L. He isn't answering. He told me, only if it's very important, to come to the apartment. I heard you asking about him last night, in the street. I think back to when I first arrived at the building, when I thought for a moment I saw a figure crouched in the shadows behind a parked car. Was that you, behind the car? She doesn't say anything, which I suppose is as much of an answer as I'm going to get. I take another step towards her. She takes a step back. Why? I ask her. Why are you looking for Ben? What's important? Where is Ben? Is all she says. I must speak with him. That's exactly what I'm trying to work out. I think something's happened. He's disappeared. It happens so quickly. Her face goes white. She looks so scared that I suddenly feel pretty scared myself. Then she swears in another language. It sounds like, Corva. What is it? I ask her. Why are you so frightened? She's shaking her head. She takes a few more steps backwards, almost tripping over her feet. Then she turns and begins walking, quickly, in the other direction. Wait, I say. And then, as she gets further away, I shout it. Wait! But she starts running. I hurry after her. Shit, she's fast. Those long legs. And I'm skinny, but not fit. Stop! Please! I try calling. I chase her down onto a busier street. People are turning to look at us. At the last minute, she veers off to the left and clatters down the stairs of a metro station. A couple walking up the steps, arm in arm, break apart in alarm to let her through. Please, I call, pounding down the stairs behind her, gasping for breath, feeling like I'm moving in slow motion. Wait! But she's through the barrier already. Luckily, there's an out-of-order gate that's been left open. I charge through after her. But as I get to a junction, the right fork leading to eastbound trains, and the left to westbound, I realize I have no idea which way she's gone. I've got a 50% chance, I suppose. I choose right. Panting, I make it down to the platform to find her standing on the opposite side of the tracks. Shit. She's staring back at me, white-faced. Please, I shout, trying to catch my breath. Please, I just want to talk to you. People are turning to stare at me, but I don't care. Wait there, I shout. There's a big rush of warm air, the thunder of an approaching train down the tunnel. I sprint up the stairs, up over the bridge that leads to the other platform. I can feel the rumble of the train passing beneath me. I clatter down the other side. I can't see her. People are piling onto the train. I try to get on, but it's full. There are too many bodies packed in there. People are stepping back down onto the platform to wait for the next train. As the doors close, I see her face, pale and scared, staring out at me. Now the train's pulling away, clackety clacking its way into the tunnel. A glance at the board displaying the route. There are 15 stations before the end of the line. A link to Ben, a lead, finally. But I've got no chance of working out where she's going, where she might get off, or, most likely, of ever seeing her again.